in northern Egypt bombed on Palm Sunday. At least 44 people have been killed and some 100 wounded. Tonight, ISIS is claiming responsibility for the attack. It's the most significant attack on the Christian minority in that area in quite some time. The first blast happened at St. George's Church in the Nile Delta, that is near the city of Tanta. A couple hours later, a suicide bomber charged St. Mark's Cathedral in the coastal city of Alexandria.
Barclays and a lot of other banks have set up these whistleblower programs to try to encourage people to speak up more if they see something amiss. And to have the CEO trying to unmask one of the whistleblowers is not a great look for those programs.
A bright spot for Samsung boss J.Y. Lee as he sat through his first day on trial for bribery on Friday, his company forecasting its best quarterly profit in 3 years. First quarter earnings estimates blowing past expectations to nearly $9 billion. It's quite the comeback from last year's exploding Note 7 recall, not to mention the political scandal that's landed the chairman behind bars.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our program. Today is Monday. It is April 10th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day, another business week is underway. We have lots to talk about today. It's Financial Literacy Month, and coming up a little later in the program, we'll give you a little bit of test to see how well you do. Maybe we'll even give you some new information to make sure that you are financially literate. In just a few seconds, we'll bring in the CEO of Jellyvision in Chicago. Amanda Lannert is here with us this morning. But first, let's check the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street, off about 13 points right now. NASDAQ and S&P futures are a little bit lower as well. Gold and silver also trading lower this morning around the globe. In Europe, all of the indices there are lower, some by as much as 0.5%. The CAC is off almost 0.5%. Asian markets are going to end mixed overnight with the Nikkei up almost 1%, 133 points. The Asian Dow is up this morning. Everything else in Asia appears to be lower this morning. Some news that's made the headlines since you were asleep last night. Gas is on its way up. Rose almost 9 cents nationally over the past 2 weeks to $2.43 a gallon. Analyst Trilby Lundberg says the increased oil prices around the globe and the U.S. missile strike on Syria have contributed to that. You heard there in the opening segment, Barclays is in a little bit of trouble this morning. They've cut the CEO pay there and also awards after it appears the CEO unmasked a whistleblower. That's a story that's still developing today. It's a big deal, but he's in a little bit of trouble. He's going to be reprimanded, lose his pay, at least his reward pay, his award pay, and bonuses, and his salary is going to be cut. Delta Airlines says it's slowly but surely still getting back to normal after another 150 flights on Sunday had to be canceled. It's all because of severe thunderstorms last week that impacted its hub in Atlanta. Delta says its operations are stabilizing, but there are not enough crews available to staff its flights, in part because of federal regulations on rest for crews. Delta is advising travelers to check its website and mobile app before any more flights might get canceled, also offering waivers to help people rebook their flights without charge. You heard Vic in the news talk about some heavy weather that's moving in from the WGN Chicago Weather Center this morning. There's a special weather statement now just coming in from the National Weather Service impacting Cook, Lake, DuPage, and Kane counties for strong thunderstorms. Near Sugar Grove right now, moving to the northeast at 55 miles per hour. We're going to have some hail with this, maybe half-inch hail, and heavy rainfall. Possible storms going to be impacting Aurora, Naperville, Elgin, Arlington Heights. Schaumburg going to do a number on the morning commute this morning. In our CEO spotlight today, Amanda Lannert. She's the CEO of Jellyvision in Chicago, and she's going to introduce us to Alex. First of all, welcome to the Opening Bell this morning, Amanda. Good to meet you. Glad to have you on the show.
My pleasure.
Jellyvision. Tell us about Jellyvision. You guys have been around for a while, but good things are happening at Jellyvision.
It's a very different business now than it was, and one of the things about Jellyvision is it is, in fact, a 107-year-old company, give or take 90 years. Yeah. We originally started as a film company and then an educational software company, but we became known in the 90s as a gaming company, making games like You Don't Know Jack and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. In 2000, we rebooted not virtual game show hosts, but virtual advisors, not making you laugh, but going to where there's furrowed brow and creating software that helps walk you through life's complicated and boring but important stuff. And then we finally really found our way and started to grow behind a product called Alex, which quite excitingly helps employees choose and use their benefits. So gaming to benefits, it's an obvious trajectory, I know. It's just like the obvious next step.
Lots of questions. First, why Alex? Why the name Alex? And tell us a little bit how that works.
I wish there was some fantastic rationale based on extensive market research and great ideas, but we were really just sitting in a room, eight of us, trying to figure out what to name this thing. And a woman named Alex Meal, who's our VP of implementation, said, Alex is a good name. And we all kind of said, yeah, it is. And so it was done. It's gender neutral, and it could kind of sound like an acronym, but truly there is no more rationale than that. We just like the name.
This is the most boring time of the year, I think, for employees when we have to go through these benefits things. And depending on what company you work for, it could really be just the worst thing.
It's more than just boring. I read a study that said 1 out of 4 millennials would rather clean a toilet than pick their benefits. Yeah. And the thing that's so surprising about that is you're getting about $10,000 to $12,000 worth of value from your company. You're getting something really important about taking care of yourself. Yet the acronyms and the jargon and the choices that you make that are so obfuscated by bad language and poor charts, it becomes drudgery instead of a great benefit offered from
your
employer.
And you bring up a good point because, you know, at the end of doing mine, I always think, did I make the right choices? What did I miss? And I've realized that now that I'm doing my taxes for the past year, I signed up for something called a health account or something that has $500 in it. No idea that I even did it. Does this help you avoid making mistakes?
It does. I mean, at the core of our product is, believe it or not, just math. We run math so you can see what each option that your employer makes available to you will actually cost you on an annualized out-of-pocket basis. There are all these weird things like premiums and deductibles, and what do they mean and how do they come together? Alex does the math for you. Is it a little bit engaging? It absolutely is. It's a Jellyvision product, so it has a sense of humor. But the key thing is we do the math so that you don't need to, and we figure out what's important to you, what you care about, what you think your needs are going to be, what your appetite for risk is. And then we highlight a plan that helps you figure out what's best for you. And then we explain how it works in plain English so that you feel confident and you're make a good decision, and you get back to your life as quickly as possible, which is really what people want to do.
Hi, let's talk a little bit about it technically. Is it something that companies pay you to create something personalized for their company, but it's you hosted, and or how does it, how do those
things
work?
It's a SaaS platform that we configure versus customizing per employer. So we've created a giant presentation layer in the sky that has millions of assets of audio and voice and animations and illustrations. And then we've created sort of middleware that makes the Alex say the right stuff based on your employer's actual plans. So it is configured so that you figure out exactly what's available to you. And we do it with a trademark sort of sense of simplicity and ease, and we reduce stress, and then you get back to your day-to-day.
And it's the thing that Jellyvision's now focused in.
It's our core product. We went from being a gaming company to being a market leader for health insurance decision support.
How has your background helped you become the CEO and flourish as CEO of Jellyvision?
You know, I get asked that a lot, and I wish I could sit here and say I have a computer science degree from Stanford, but I really don't. And my career doesn't make sense. I started in advertising. I'm the kid of academics. I never had a good internship or network or experience whatsoever in college. But I did grow up in a house with a lot of books, and I did grow up with a student mindset of I can learn. I learned how to learn. So I think being, you know, ahead of a startup, so much of it is you don't have a playbook, and stuff is constantly thrown at you that you don't know how to handle. So, you know, I have the ability to sit down and research and call people and network, and it's, you know, the student mindset has probably served me better than any experience or background.
Yeah.
I have.
As I was doing a little bit of research on you, because this is the first time I've met you, it's good meeting you, by the way, all of the things in your background, it's so, there's so many different things. Like, for instance, you've climbed Mount Rainier, you've done so many, your cat is actually named Dog. Does it take sort of this sort of personality to run a startup? Because we've talked to so many people who say it can be stressful and you're just going to be the perfect fit.
I think there are two things you need to run a startup. One is grit. Like the ability to get up and get up and get up and get up and sort of have a good sense of humor and be relatively undeterred. And the second thing I think you need is the ability to function with very little sleep. Most people I talk to who run startups are not excellent at sleeping. And so I think that those two together, plus having a vision, like being hungry and seeing the world being better because of your software, those things help.
The other thing, too, is having a sense of humor, because you have a wonderful sense of humor.
Well, it's just it makes for a more enjoyable workday, right?
Yeah.
I'm easily amused, and I spend a decent amount of time trying to amuse myself. I think it's healthy. Work is a grind. Stuff is hard. It's helpful to have a good perspective, and it definitely is helpful to work with hilarious people.
Yes.
Having a company full of hilarious people makes life more fun.
But as somebody reaching into the company, as we were doing for this interview, you first go and look for press releases and background and bio and research. Do you write the press releases? Because the headlines are amazing.
They're written by a marketing team.
This is the latest headline. Jellyvision, maker of employee communication platform Alec, secures $20 million in funding, doesn't plan to get all weird about it.
It's one of my favorites. That's Justin Harkin.
Right. It makes me as a reporter want to learn more immediately. And
our MO is to be human, to speak in plain English, to be humble, and then also to remember that people are bored and bombarded. And humor is a great technique for getting people to pay attention and getting people to maintain attention as you're trying to get them to do stuff in their best interest. So humor isn't just, frivolity. It's a device for getting people through what they need to do. It's helping the medicine go down for us. And then that press release, I just saw it. I laughed out loud at the headline. It's one of my favorites because it's so on the nose to what we feel. You're like, we raised all this money. Oh, we're going to be rich. No, we're not. We're back to the grind right away.
Yeah.
We know it's not like a celebration. It's just expectations. We know we have to put our heads down and execute more than ever. So I just thought it was like the perfect Jellyvision take on fundraising.
And so you're not going to get weird about it. Let me ask you, $20 million is something to brag about. What will this enable you to do?
So hilariously, it's a fully secondary round, which is a short way of saying we didn't put any money on the balance sheet. We just created shareholder returns for longtime investors. Remember that we're the super old company? So this was really us saying, thank you, early investors. Thank you, longstanding employees. Here's a chance to create some liquidity. So we did all the work of raising $20 million and putting out a dime on the balance sheet. We have been cash flow positive since 2009. We run our business based on building stuff that our customers think is valuable, so they pay us for it. And then we take that money and we dump it into more stuff to build that is helpful and valuable to them. So we've been funded through revenue since 2009.
And so what are the other secrets to that? I mean, do you have anything you can share with, because our audience is full of startup CEOs and other entrepreneurs. How did you do it?
So I think one of the key lessons, and I'll go into a quick little anecdote that isn't mine about it, but I think one of the key things to finally finding your way is to be customer obsessed, but not just with what they say, but really analyzing what they do. A million years ago when I was at Leo Burnett, there was a group that did specialty women marketing called Leo She, and they had done a study for Oil of Olay where they had talked to a bunch of women about marketing, and women were like, we've earned every wrinkle. We're so proud to be 50. We don't want you marketing products to us using 20-year-olds. Oil of Olay said, amazing, great insight. Let's change our marketing and show older women celebrating. Mm-hmm. And sales tanked. So they went back to the same women and said, I understand your attitude. You've earned every wrinkle. Show me what's in your drawer. And what's in the drawer was Retin-A and anti-wrinkle cream and all this kind of stuff. So we've brought that insight into bear of saying, what are you spending money on? What are you doing? Not what are you thinking and saying, what are you doing? And as best you can sort of create products that evolve existing behavior, that solve existing pain that's being funded, the more likely you are to have something that will actually get money in market versus just buzz or an initial look. Well, you'll get the sale if you're truly solving pain that's being invested in by your customers.
You talked about coming in and having a sense of humor. What else is behind your CEO-ness? Is there something else you bring to the table every day? What's your management
style? No, there's nothing else I bring to the table. It's it. Sorry. I'm really good, I think, at hiring awesome people and getting out of their way. We're a trust-first company. We're a place where you can really make a mark no matter what your background is, because we believe it's not what you've done but what you're going to do. So we look for DNA, not necessarily resumes. I'm really direct and transparent. I don't believe in hoarding information. I try to teach as best I can, but I'm really into people getting out and making their own mistakes and trying things. And I think it becomes, a place where people want to work.
We're here sitting talking as we just marked Equal Pay Day. We've had a lot of conversation here on the Opening Bell recently about women finding mentors and helping them grow in companies and having more women at the boardroom table. How can women work on that? How can men work on that? What needs to be done to bring both of those up?
So I think the first thing is I've had such incredible help from mentors who are all white men. And I'd say, hey, white men, keep it up. And the second thing is I would encourage women who have gotten any level of success in their business to do a couple of things. One is to show up to networking events. Everyone would rather be on their couch drinking wine and watching Netflix, but start to show up and lady up a room. Show that there can be diversity in the room. And the second thing I would say is once you get, you know, even mid-level career, if you can start to write checks, you should. Because if we change who invests in businesses, we'll change who is invested in, and then we'll change who has the quick breakout successes. So for me, Suzanne Muchin, also formerly of WGN, we agreed that we would meet with at least 50 women starting businesses 2 years ago, and we both have done it every year. But a huge part of it is men understanding the value that they can play in creating diversity and creating successes for women, and just, you know, keep it up.
There's a lot of technology out there lately, too. What kind of technology do you like? Aside from work.
In general, yeah, I am very bullish on AI helping me be more efficient. It's stuff like scheduling, reducing repetitive tasks. I think that AI, we're very nascent, early stage. We have not seen the best of what's coming. Please give me a driverless car. The thrill of automotive driving is not for me. If I could have a robot drive me around, for sure I would. And then I'm excited to see how robots and automation are going to improve medicine and healthcare. I think that there's some real potential for life-changing innovation there.
Is there some bad to that too? Because we're facing possibly a robot revolution taking jobs. How should we approach that moving forward?
I think that with the same sort of optimism and balanced perspective as we have, robots have been taking over the world since the change from horses to cars. I mean, the same thing. Robots are going to put us out of business, the assembly line. Honestly, the more things change, the more they stay the same from a thematic perspective. Worrying about robots putting us out of business is 100 years old. I am not afraid.
What about the You Don't Know Jack and the games? Do you play any of those still? Or you?
I don't get to play games as much as I would like to be perfectly honest. There's no shame in games. The company that was Jellyvision Games is now Jackbox Games, and they're absolutely killing it. They have some incredible properties out right now. And when they do get busted out at Jellyvision, they are so fun. They're a tremendous amount of fun. I like to play games.
People see the $20 million funding, and especially startup folks, and it gives them optimism, too, that the money's out there, isn't it?
The money is out there. And one of the sort of unfair things is that we didn't need the money, which made it perhaps a little easier to get. But there is definitely growth stage money out there. We're seeing more and more investment coming in from the coast into Chicago. Early stage investment is happening here. I'm a member of Hyde Park Angels. They had their most active year ever. There's a lot of liquidity for early stage in Chicago, and then the coasts are coming to the Midwest, which is exciting.
Yeah, we're hearing more and more about that. People are suddenly kind of waking up to, hey, Chicago's a pretty cool town.
There are some great companies. I'm a huge fan of a bunch of companies right now that are based in Chicago.
Care to talk about any of them?
I think Sprout Social. Yep. I think they're going to have a tear. I think Outcome Health, formerly Context Media, I think they're going to rule the world. Those are two of the most dynamic and inspiring founders I've ever met. I'm hugely into them. Vibes is reinventing currency. Avant and Raise, they're just tearing it up out of the gates. There are a lot of companies putting up big numbers quickly in the Midwest, building real businesses, perhaps less flashy than the coast, but like real businesses are being built here.
What about those days when things don't go completely like you want them to go?
Which is every day?
A lot of people have those days. What would you be your advice for folks who are dealing with that?
Perspective that I've gotten over the last 17 odd years of being at Jellyvision is that the road up is never linear. It's never linear. Mm-hmm. It's never just like smooth sailing. And being in a startup is like being in a rocket where people come to watch you because they think it's really cool, but they forget what it feels like to be the astronaut strapped inside. You're wearing uncomfortable clothes. You're laying on your back and you have a nuclear sized explosion 50 feet from your head. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. So just remembering like the reason why people watch is if you make it, you can change the world. And isn't that exciting? So just the perspective of like we're trying something hard. And then the other thing I'd say about doing the hard stuff in life is it used to be it's the risk compared to the sure thing. Hey, newsflash, there is no longer any sure thing. No. There is no such thing as put your head down for 30 years and you'll be taken care of. It's over. So you might as well do what you love with people you really enjoy.
Where do you see Jellyvision in 5 or 10 years, or do you even want to look into a crystal ball?
No, I look into a crystal ball a lot. And I'll be honest, you hear about Google and their 20-year plans and nothing if it's not a $1 billion idea. I'm not that smart. I can't have 20-year plans. A lot of times I haven't seen where we're going to be. Even 3 years, I look back, I'm like, wow, it's a different business than I thought it would be. But we're very interested in evolving from helping people choose insurance to helping people use insurance to helping people solve for their overall financial well-being. We are obsessed with the lack of financial wellness in America. We are so concerned about credit card debt and student loan debt and lack of savings. And so we're going to be building software that helps people very agnostic. We're not selling anything but math. We're not going to sell anything but math, but we're going to help people make better financial decisions to set themselves up and sort of help employers take better care of employees through our software.
Amanda, wonderful meeting you and best of luck.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Amanda Lannert is the CEO of Jellyvision in Chicago. You can check them out online, jellyvision.com, and on Twitter as well, Jellyvision Lab. And we'll continue our conversation with Amanda after the bell, after the opening bell, and post our full conversation with her in our podcast of the opening bell later this morning on WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:41. Glad to have you along for another week of the opening bell. This is Financial Literacy Month. Are you financially literate? A lot of people are not. We thought we'd bring in a veteran wealth advisor, Chris White, this morning. His book is called Working with the Emotional Investor. Talk a little bit more about financial literacy and some of the things that make us make decisions, emotion being one of them. Chris, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Pleasure to be with you.
So, Chris, let's talk a little bit about Financial Literacy Month. Are there any statistics about how many of us are financially literate versus not?
I haven't seen anything along those lines, but I would say that even after having done this for decades, I still learn something every day. It's a it's an ongoing process.
I would have to agree with you there. So when we say people may not be financially literate, what does that mean? Is it just they don't know how to do math, or is it something more complicated than that?
I think that we all have a gut instinct about what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, and too often we lose sight of that. So, we can all sharpen our mathematical skills, but at the end of the day, it's important to be aware of what makes us tick and what makes us make decisions, whether they're right or wrong. And that's really where my book comes in, being aware of what goes on inside you emotionally. Whether you are a wealth advisor or whether you just have money to put in the markets, that's the key, is to be aware of what's going on inside you.
I'm guessing it's those gut instincts you were talking about and emotions. The gut instincts, can they be wrong. Sometimes I have wrong ones, and you do too. Everybody does. What kind of emotions, though, are we talking about? Is it just nervousness or what?
First of all, the first point of the book is that all investing is emotional. And, Buffett says that the market swings from fear to greed and back to fear again. So those are certainly dominant emotions. But if you go one layer below that, there are essentially three types of investors that I identify in the book. And I did this with the work of a psychologist here in Boston, David Cantor. There's fixers, protectors, and survivors. And each one has their own characteristic set of emotions that can trip them up. And so it's important for us to know about ourselves and who we are, what sort of investor we are, whether we're a fixer or a survivor or protector, and be aware of those emotions that can trip us up. And once we're aware of those, then we are, then we can navigate the field and make better decisions.
So let's talk a little bit about those. What would be a fixer, a survivor, a protector? What would be an action that one of those would take? How do you describe each of those?
So a good example of a fixer is someone like Mr. Trump, who is charming on the outside. And can do. A lot of CEOs are fixers. And yet, he's able to get things done. Witness the missile launch on the Syrian airfield. And he'll do it quickly. That's a characteristic of a fixer. But, and this is another point of the book, when things get tough, when we move into a high-stakes situation, the fixer can become abusive, And when it comes to the markets, they want to win, at all costs. And so they will tend to double up when the market's corrected a little bit, perhaps too soon, and they can lose money that way. So that's a pitfall for the fixer. The protector is someone who wants to care for everybody, when the going gets tough, when we move into a high-stakes situation, they get increasingly anxious, and they want to sell at the bottom, which is exactly the wrong time to sell. But they are so tired of the pain that they give up and just want out. And so that trips them up. The survivor is sort of a steady eddy, and they just soldier on no matter what. And they really need to step back and take a look at what they're doing. Sometimes, they're wedded to their positions, and they need to be changing as the market deteriorates, and they need to reduce some of their risk. So each one has their own pitfalls, and as an advisor, I've seen them all over the years, and I know as individual investors, I've seen my friends go through this, I've seen myself go through this, where you get tripped up by who you are and your emotions exactly at the time when you should be doing perhaps something exactly the opposite.
Chris, in your book, again, it's called Working with the Emotional Investor, you talk about how experiences and emotions from our past can impact our investment decisions today. What do you mean by that?
There was a very powerful article which came out in the early 90s by Kahneman and Tversky, two people, famous researchers. They turned the world of economics on their head. They said that loss is twice as painful to someone as gain is pleasurable. And the reason that turned things on its head was that suddenly behavioral finance was launched on the scene. Used to be that it was thought that gain and loss were equally painful and pleasurable, but no, in fact, loss is more painful. Why is that? Well, the work I did with David Cantor shows that a lot of our experience of loss goes back to childhood, and where we suddenly realized that we were no longer the center of the universe. We might have had some traumatic experience as a child, and as a child, we don't have a lot of defenses. So we are seared with that sense of loss, and that will... We carry that forward with us, and we're very sensitive to loss, even as an adult. And so when we experience a loss in the market, that's why it's at least twice as painful. Some have said it's even more than that, twice as painful as a gain is pleasurable, because all those echoes, those memories of the loss come back, flooding back to us and cause us to doubt our abilities to do things.
The book includes some ideas about how we can harness those emotions and sort of steady ourselves. That sounds like a pretty tall order, though. I guess that's not going to be an easy thing, is it? Or is it?
Who said that this was going to be easy?
Right.
No, that's right. It's not easy, and you have to first of all, you have to be aware of who you are, and then secondly, you have to be aware of what you're feeling at the moment. Even today, if I'm trading in a rocky market, I can feel my shoulders get tightened up. I can, my stomach gets tight. And I've been doing this for years and years. So it's, you know that the emotions are there, and you just have to be aware of them, and you have to talk yourself through them and step back and make a more rational decision, knowing what is potentially driving you.
Chris, I know just reporting on a rocky market makes my stomach tight, so I can I can only imagine what it's like with a lot of money on the line. Chris White, thank you for being with us, a veteran financial wealth advisor. The book is called Working with the Emotional Investor. Glad to have you on this morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And I would just refer people to the website, which is chriswhiteauthor.com, chrishwhiteauthor.com, for more information.
All right, Chris, thank you very much. Again, the book, Working with the Emotional Investor.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street later this morning. Things have been sort of weak to tepid. Dow futures are now flat. S&P futures pointing upward a little bit, but everything's still pretty much flat. Crude oil at $52.55. A barrel, gold, and silver are trading lower this morning. A couple of other stories we're watching for you this morning from the world of airlines. We're seeing airline passengers, airline quality is on the rise. According to a new survey, the findings of the annual report on airline quality being released today by researchers at Wichita State University and Embry-Riddle Aeronautics University. Researchers use the information compiled by U.S. Department of Transportation to rate the airlines for on-time performance, baggage handling, bumping passengers over oversold flights, and complaints filed within the government. The full list comes out later today, but generally it appears to be positive in terms of how the airlines are doing. Oreo cookie maker Mondelez, based in the suburbs, thinking about replacing its longtime CEO, Irene Rosenfeld, according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. The report says Mondelez's board has discussed possible replacements for Rosenfeld, who is also chair of the company, hired a recruiting firm to evaluate replacements. Like some of its competitors, Mondelez has slashed costs, work to transform its business as a customer's appetite for packaged food has faded. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, no major government reports are due, but we will see the swearing in of Neil Gorsuch as the 101st Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is also getting ready to head to Russia to meet with the G7 ministerial alliance there. And also, we think, with the Russian leaders, perhaps even with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Also today, we're going to see the Billboard finalists. The 2017 Billboard Music Awards finalists are announced. The Billboard Music Awards ceremony will take place on May 21st, and this is the eve of Passover as well. Lots of celebrations happening around the world and commemorations. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Monday, April 10th, 2017.